Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute and answer your questions live on YouTube. If you want to help us out, be sure to subscribe to our channel and add us to your podcast feed over on iTunes or Google Play.
We all need sheet music, and we're proud to announce that we're working with Sheet Music Plus, home of the world's largest sheet music selection, and is a proud sponsor of the Flute Channel.
Finally, if you're looking into buying a new flute, be sure to check out the Flute Center of New York at flutesforsale.com. With our code TFC at checkout, you'll be able to try up 3 flutes or piccolos for 10 days, and whichever instrument you choose, you get an extended 18-month warranty on it. So be sure at checkout to put in the special code TFC at flutesforsale.com. Now on with the show.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Amelie.
Hi Lily.
How are you?
How's it good? Good. I'm good. How's everybody on the chat? If you guys have any questions or anything, leave it in the comment section. Oh, someone just subscribed. That's so awesome. Thank you, Daniela Andres, for subscribing. You guys are awesome. You get a little star if you subscribe. And many more things, I hope, like
That's
learning
great.
The flute. This is where we talk about all things flute. We catch up on some things that we've heard in the comment section. This week's topic is about favorite warm-ups, and we have a couple of favorite warm-ups that we kind of asked in our most previous video. Most recent of videos, which was the video that you did about how to get a clear sound on the flute, which is actually doing pretty well, and a lot of cool people said some cool stuff. So we'll start with that. If you guys have any questions about warming up, leave it down in the comments. Or if you have questions about anything, just let us know in the comments and we will get to those as soon as we can. What do we got here? Oh yeah. I used to play Ben Lee. He says, I usually play long tones and James Galway's warm up to keep my embouchure similar as possible as I can. A few days ago, I realized my embouchure was too tight and not relaxed. So I'm focusing on keeping my embouchure the same. And also I do the Tafanel and Gobert finger exercises. All pretty good stuff. I'm not very familiar with the James Galway thing. I probably have seen it. I don't know. I have no idea. I think it's a thing he's passed down to people, like his.
Or maybe it's the scale. When people subscribe to his.
Oh yeah, those that thing, the thing that he does. Maybe he gets PDFs and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Tafanel and Gobert, we all know. Well, if you don't know it already, Tafanel and Gobert, it's in the public domain. You can get the sheet music readily online. But he's one of the Tafanel and Gobert. It's part of a bigger book, right? But that's like the 7 big exercises. That's the 7, right? 17 daily exercises. There's no cover on it anymore.
It's very funny that they call it daily exercises, because who does that in one day?
I think somebody, I really want actually, as a video, I want to go through the whole thing and see how long it takes.
That would be quite
That'd
funny.
That'd be cool. If it took 2 hours or 3 hours, like all of it. Everything
means it's a lot of dedication. If you do that every day, you're...
Yeah, that's something.
You have my admiration.
You also have time. Like,
but it's a lot of time.
You know, who's got
time
for that?
I think it's interesting. The person, the comment you just read.
Yeah.
I like that he talks about, or she talks, I don't know.
Ben Lee. I would assume it's a man. Ben.
Okay.
Yeah,
so he talks about focusing on something, you know, being aware of what's going on. Because I don't think it's got to do as much with the, with what exercise you do, but really being aware of how you are, your posture, your embouchure, where it's placed, if there's enough space between where the air goes out and where it hits the lip plate. If it's too close, it's not going to sound good. You have to keep it far enough.
Totally.
You have to keep a good distance between those two. Like, I encourage my students to play their whole register at least once before they start playing, just to feel, but the point of it is to feel where they are and it's to be aware. It's a bit like a little meditation thing.
Sure.
More than what exercise you did and if you just went through it. So I like that person was talking about, oh, I'm focusing on this, keeping my embouchure steady or all those things. Yeah.
No, totally. I agree. Hi to Martu, Matthew, Abby, and Robert, all these people who are here on the... in the chat today. Nice to see you guys. We were a little late today, but we're here.
Yeah.
And that's great. And we're ready. Roger Moore says, I have to check my pitch to make sure I am in tune. I know I'm a bit out of tune in the tuner. Oh, I have to practice. I have a practice place that is not consistent. It's scattered. I'll start right from the beginning again.
Okay.
I have to check my pitch to make sure I'm in tune. I know when I'm out of tune, but need to use a tuner to check. I have a practice place that's not a constant temperature, and it gets warm and hot sometimes, and it affects the pitch of my flute. I work, in terms of working on what I warm up with, I work my way up the scale, and he's pretty confident with his high B flat, but want to get up to the C, because when playing C on a major scale, I don't want to stop at A or below it, A or B below it, you know, so when you go all three octaves, you know, he stops like, you know, like,
yeah,
definitely, that's a good goal to have, get that C, you know, that the high C is very easy to play on the flute.
But yeah, temperature is going to affect also the intonation.
Oh, 100%.
But
100%.
Yeah, it's about also, yeah, working with a tuner is good because it gives you a visual cue of what's going on. But you have to make a connection between what you see and what you hear. That's the point of it, to be able to be aware that, oh, it's going down. That's what it sounds like. It shouldn't sound like that. What should it sound like? And then you do it again. And then, but practicing also with drones and stuff like that, so you can also feel what it is to be in tune and out of tune, because practicing is also about making mistakes, you know? It's a time to even play out of tune on purpose if you need to, just so you really feel, oh, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
But playing with a drone, which is just a note that you... Like,
yeah, you got that
my
there.
My tuner does it, but I'm sure you can find...
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a real sound. It's really just the
so
actual
that's a,
frequency.
That's an E flat. You
know? That's the frequency. Yeah.
So you can play your E flat scale on it and then try to hear each interval and how it sounds and everything.
Yeah.
That's also a good way to practice intonation and then playing with others.
Yeah.
But I feel personally, I don't know how you feel about that, but when I overthink intonation and I become nervous about it, I start being out of tune. You know, at one point you have to let it go and just trust your body and trust your ears.
Yeah. And be in tune with yourself in what you're playing, you know.
Yeah.
Know the tendencies of intervals, you know, know all those things.
But once you've practiced all those things with a tuner and with and at one point I feel if you you have to kind of trust. Because if you start overthinking things, then you personally I used to overcompensate things because I was so nervous that it would be out of tune. I was making it out of tune. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I'm sort of, I was used to be the same way now. It's just a matter of just trusting yourself and trusting all the stuff you've done to prepare. And
I guess
picking at something like that, maybe it comes with time. Some people get it early too, but I mean, like, there's no, like we were saying in the car, there's no pre-planned route for success, you know, so... Whatever might work for you might not work for somebody else, but express each other's ideas so we never know. What else? Somebody said, I always use the exercise you used in the video, and I always use scales and arpeggios as a warm-up.
That's cool.
That's the thing that you kind of did, well, the thing that you did in that video in the... How to get a clear sound on the flute was a kind of a variation of Moise's long tone exercises thingy, you know.
Sometimes I do it a bit faster.
Yeah, quicker.
But even in Moise, you have a part where he does it by 3/5, you know.
Yeah.
So,
and it actually comes. Yeah, exactly. I think it's even in Paul and Tapanola's
Big Book.
If you
practice scales and arpeggios, it's good to change once in a while. 100%.
100%.
So I used to make. Like tables and write all the scales and put an X.
Yeah, when
so
you're,
this way I knew, okay, last scale I practiced with this one, now I'm going to practice this one. 100%. You know?
Yeah, you get more variety. You know,
you like make sure you practice
all everything instead of the things you're comfortable with all
and
the
time. And
you
can't practice them all in one day. Uh-huh. Well, you can, but
you can.
Most of the time we don't do that.
I think our brain eventually says, like, stop with the noise a little bit, you know.
I think it's better to do it well and just
be organized. Less is more. Yeah, less is more. Yeah.
Be organized so you know where you are and you know.
That makes sense.
Start from there next time.
Totally. And let us know where you're all from right now. I know a lot of people from Los Angeles, East Hartford. Let us know in the comments. And if you have any questions or anything to talk about warm-ups or talk about anything, just let us know down in the comments or on the side of the comments, wherever the comments are. And then who else we got? Then somebody said, De La Sonorité. They practice De La Sonorité. That's very cool. That whole book is really good if you go through the whole thing. Some people, I think there's a lot of, focus on the first page, or I guess first or second page. But there's a lot of good in it.
Three parts. Yeah. The second part is very good to practice dynamics and breathing, because it's very long and you have to breathe in specific places. And the third part is good for intervals and also articulation, because he makes you practice it in different ways, you know, all detached and then slurred by two. Well, it's a good book, De la sonorité by Marcel Moïse.
Candace Kane says, I always buzz / whistle on the head joint with the five tones like you did in the beginning. Then I play my scales and harmonics on C, long tones, chromatic scales, and octaves. Almost everything on your 5-minute warm-up for Flutist in a Hurry sheet. I actually do have that in my music folder, and sometimes I use that too. Yeah, it's kind of that sheet music you have on the website, on the flutechannel.com website. It's pretty interesting. You can get that for free there. It's a nice 2 pages of like really
interesting stuff. Well, that's my thing when I'm in a hurry. Yeah, because I try to have a little bit of everything. So I don't warm up all the time when I play, but if I have something important, I want to make sure I sound good. I tend to warm up more, but I try to do a little bit of pure sound, you know, just sound. Then I add dynamics, a little bit of fingers, so like chromatic scales, stuff like that. Articulation, because sometimes we forget, but articulation is so important because the beginning of a note is what gives it its quality, really, you know. So articulation and intervals. Like, that's why I think octaves are so good. Harmonics are amazing.
Harmonics are
so good.
They're so undervalued, underappreciated harmonics.
Yeah.
We should definitely make them. I think we have a harmonic video, maybe. If we don't, we should make one.
And it's so important to know what to focus on, and that's why it's good sometimes to take, even if it's one lesson or go in one festival. So someone can look at you and say, oh, there's this thing, you know.
And then you'd be like, oh, I never even thought about working on
because
that.
Because very often we're not aware. Our body does 100%. Things that, like, making your face muscles move for no reason because you want so much that high note that you crunch with your nose. I see a lot of that. I see a lot of muscle moving that are in the way of me. It's a movement that is not only not necessary, but is detrimental to the sound. And people are not aware, and that's why it's good to have an outside perspective sometimes of someone who's good at doing that.
And aware, and be able to understand.
So that you can become aware. Because that's, for me, that's what a lesson is for. Like, that's what a teacher is supposed to do, make you aware of what you're doing. Because sometimes we're not, very often we're not. Like, we don't feel our body the way it's going in space, you know? And it's a lot about that, I think. Letting things happen without trying to control them so much. Because when we try to control so much, that's when muscles start being crispate, like being tensed.
Yeah.
And they get in the way of the result that we're looking for.
Guy here wants to know, they've been playing for about 7 months, but they're struggling to get a clear tone when switching octaves. It just sounds off. If I keep playing on the same octave, everything sounds good. A little airy sometimes when on the second octave, but it's not a big problem. It's hard to make the transition between the octaves to sound good. Any tips on that?
Well, I don't see him, so I don't know. It could be many different things. It could be too much movement of the lips between octaves, because it's a very tiny motion. There's not much movement going here. So the extremities of the lips, like right and left, they don't move much.
No.
They don't move really. And then there's a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of movement going on to send the air in the right spot, but it's so tiny. You know, I don't focus on that too much. Really, it's the airspeed. So when you go higher, you want to have more airspeed. Just more speed than in low register. In low register, you'll use warm air that goes slowly, and in higher register, you'll use colder air that goes fast. And you can try in your hand. You do warm, and it's, you know, it's slow, and then fast, it's cold. And then once you're, you can change angle, you can change the speed, then you can do it on your flute. But usually people work too hard. What I see is people moving too much outside. What is able to be seen moves too much, and not enough tension in the abdominals to push the air at the right speed. And keep everything opened. But that's just like, I didn't see the person. Maybe it's not that. But what I see the most is that.
What was one of your favorite warm-ups when you were younger? Like, besides the 5-minute thing, but when you were not in a hurry, what did you look at the most?
I liked to do long notes, once loud and once soft.
So when you say long
notes, to work on my colors, la, 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 la.
Long notes mean, for people who are not playing, like, playing it like that, like one short, one long.
Yeah, in semitones.
That's long, in semitones, okay.
Long tones, I guess you call them.
Yeah, and you'd be looking, and you'd be looking at and listening to, like, uniformity and
to practice my dynamics.
Oh, your dynamics, cool, yeah. That's
so
awesome.
Do it once forte and once piano.
Gotcha.
So I worked on that a lot. And I used to like working on them with no vibrato, so I could really listen to the quality of the sound. Without the vibrato, kind of... Sometimes I feel the vibrato is a little shiny thing on top that we can use to disguise our sound a little bit. Like if you play without vibrato and it sounds good, for me, it's like, if I sound good with no vibrato, I feel it's a real sound. And then I add vibrato for expressivity.
Right.
But when I do long tones, I try sometimes to use vibrato and sometimes not. Just to listen to the sound itself. Yeah. But then I had a lot of scales and technical exercises like that. I didn't feel that was a warm-up that much for me. It was more a building thing.
Right.
I saw scales as I'm building, but all those things, I saw it as I'm building my toolkit. You know, getting more comfortable with everything, being able to play faster, and have wider dynamics and better articulation, faster articulation, all those things, clearer.
Yeah. I don't want to do that.
It was more about building than warming up per se, you know?
Laying a foundation, I guess.
Yeah, building my technique.
Robert Cowles, he wants to know, is there a way to play high register without increasing the airspeed?
I don't think so. Do you? What do you think?
No, because you need that velocity in order to reach to those frequencies.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah.
You can
maybe
when you change the aperture, you can, that also has an effect on the airspeed and all those things. So you can, it's not only with your abdominals that you can do it, but you have to do it. The thing is, you need some resistance somewhere, and since the flute is an open instrument, the resistance is there's none. The instrument doesn't give you a resistance, so you have to make it yourself. So it's easy to just forget to put resistance. And what happens is very often people put resistance in their lips and their throat, which are bad places
to
put
resistance.
Yeah, they're
not good places,
Where you have to put resistance is in the belly, where you have your abdominals.
Yeah.
And, you know?
To get that speed a bit quicker.
Yeah,
it's not
that
massive,
resistance.
Yeah, the resistance.
That
resistance
that you would get if you play the trumpet, you have resistance. You have to use your abdominals or it's not going to come out. With the flute, it's a bit more difficult because you don't feel that resistance,
right.
But you have to put it anyways.
Yeah.
And
it's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah. Now I'm a big fan of Pilates right now. Since a year I've been doing it, I love it. And they talk a lot about the core and engaging your core all the time, engaging your core in your daily life. It's really about, not just about an hour of exercise there, but how you maintain your body while, you know, you're doing anything in life. Well, how you stand and all those things, how you... And it's a lot about the core.
Mm-hmm.
But engaging your core when you play the flute, it's... Like, that's very important. Because that's how you sustain your sound, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, we're lucky in a way, because then we work on our abdominal, our deep abdominals, you know, and they're good for a good posture and the back and everything, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
I think you need airspeed.
Airspeed, yeah, it's key.
Yeah. And once you start feeling that resistance that's not really there, that you have to imagine and put there, first times I felt it, I was like, what? I have to play like that all the time? I'm going to be so tired.
Yeah,
you're
going to be exhausted,
You get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But did you feel like that when you started feeling it?
Yeah,
or am I
bit.
The only lazy one who was like, that's a lot of work. I'm not sure I want to do that.
No, it was fine.
Okay, I was lazy.
I was going to be tired. No, it was a new sensation, definitely.
Yeah.
But like... It's something that eventually you develop the muscle capacity to do it, right? Some people
and
have it already
a
little
have
bit,
to
I guess. But
think about it anymore because it becomes second nature.
Yeah.
And it's not like I have to think about it nonstop.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, for people, I think it really is, it's just the thing that keeps things not out of pitch. It keeps that note steady. That's what's working down there, is keeping that velocity and that, not velocity, but even, I mean, that velocity, but that tone. Say you play a tone, there's invulnerabilities in it. It's not necessarily vibrato. It's actually the thing down there not keeping that air even throughout, you know? So just to kind of clarify even more. But yeah, it's very interesting. So this is about the halfway point. If you guys have any questions, any more questions, just let us know. We're just going to let everybody know about our future things that we're going to be doing. This will be probably the last Flute Talk podcast until about December, but we're going to have just practicings every weekend. Sort of catch up on some stuff, some really cool things that we're going to be doing, and some new videos and stuff. And also, we have the Flute Center of New York. If you guys are looking for a flute, we have a deal with Flute Center of New York at flutesforsale.com. You can try up to 3 or 4 flutes if you use our code TFC. This is a great opportunity because they have the world's largest selection of flutes. Piccolos, altos, used section 2 and new. Head joints, whatever. You give the code TFC on the telephone, or you can go on their website, flutes4sale.com, and you get in contact with them. They're all flutists in there. They all know a lot about flute. They can help you out. Just use our code TFC, and then you can get that deal that you can try out up to 3 to 4 flutes sent to you for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also get a
extended
warranty as well once you select the flute that you want. And yeah, it's really
and
awesome.
It also helps us.
Yep,
so
that
you're
definitely, you're helping us keep this all up and keep this thing going. We've had a lot of flute players already buying flutes, and we've been so happy for them. Oh, yeah, totally. And and it's really grateful. Also, we're very thankful for that. And also, Patreon.com is also another place. If you go to Patreon.com/TheFluteChannel, you can go there and donate as little as $1 or $2 a month. And that helps us make more videos, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's little perks that we're working on right now that we're going to be adding to that site right now. But if you start early, you're definitely going to be helping us out in that manner as well. And then finally, we also have, you have flute lessons online. You just had a lesson this morning that you did online.
Yeah, and I'm giving another one tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
morning.
Yeah. So, totally. So you can have lessons. Yeah, it's great. You can do
it. I love it.
Yeah.
And I have very good comments. People tell me, and I can hear it.
Sure.
There's huge progress, very fast.
Mm.
And I thought maybe, it's not going to be as easy as in person. I don't see it.
No, definitely
difference.
A lot of them
it's
progress.
Pretty,
all of them progress, in fact.
It's pretty easy to adapt because you see pretty well. Like, if there's enough light, of course.
Be well lit. Be well lit.
Be well lit, but I can see, I can hear, and then usually, sometimes I feel it's almost better than in person because you have the camera there, because in person, yeah, sometimes I'm on the side, then I'm really looking at their totally face. I'm absolutely really looking. So I see pretty much everything, and it's very cool.
Yeah. Like,
people have progressed a lot.
Totally.
People have told me that for years they were trying to play in the high register, let's say, and after one or two lessons, mm-hmm, with me, they figured it out, you
totally
know. So that's very, for me, it's very gratifying. Mm-hmm. It's fun.
Yeah,
I love
and
it.
And it's gratifying for them because they get, yeah, to, and get to progress, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can contact us at info@theflutechannel.com. So info@theflutechannel.com. You can have one lesson. You can have a half hour lesson. You can also have package deals. We have package deals for 4, 8, 12 lessons. And that way you can get yourself nice and sorted and work with Lily. And it's really a lot of fun. I think that everybody has been doing it. Has had a great time. So yeah, info@theflutechannel.com. Okay, back to our questions. Muove says, how do you play longer phrases in the higher register without running out of air? I feel that I leak a lot of air.
That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so maybe you overblow.
Mm.
So you want to have air speed, but it doesn't need any, doesn't mean more air quantity.
Mm.
You have a little bit more air quantity, maybe, but not that much. And to do that, maybe don't, yeah, it's, mm-hmm, there's a lot going on there, because mm-hmm, you have the opening,
yeah,
that is linked to that, and then you have the airspeed,
mm-hmm,
and they're all linked. So you have to make a compromise between how big you open your lips, how fast you send the air, what's the amount of air you're going to send. I think it's about, to have an open, a good sound in the high register, yeah, there's the air, but there's also the part where you have to open in the back, mm, of the mouth, and almost imagine like as if the sound is coming from the top of your head, like a,
mm-hmm,
volcano,
mm-hmm,
and this way you really feel it's open, and then it resonates better, and mm-hmm, it's a bit like your head voice when you sing, you're like la 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 la, and
mm-hmm,
oh oh oh, you have your,
mm-hmm,
your lower notes are your chest voice, you know, so you have to open everything in the head so that it can resonate there.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you probably overblow, and maybe you don't focus the air on the embouchure plate enough. Maybe it's a bit too wide,
mm-hmm,
and it's, you have to make a closed V and find the sweet spot,
mm-hmm,
and try to send the air
the
more
cone, yeah,
more there,
mm-hmm,
than everywhere.
Right.
Try that,
yeah,
and
try
tell
that
us if it's helpful.
Yeah, let us know in the comments in another video that we make, and we'll definitely read it and follow up for sure. What do we got here? We got Robert Coles. He wants to know, I find that F sharp, F, and E are quite fragile, and when I've asked why, I've been told it's the nature of the flute, but what is it that causes them to become unsteady and crack?
Because they're
unstable frequencies. They're very actually particular frequencies, so it's really hard to, the way the flute's made, because when you break over, especially in the fourth octave, you start
but
skipping
keys. I
think
he's talking about the second octave.
Oh, really? I thought he was talking about
here,
the high
go
ones. Oh, yeah. I thought he was talking about the third octave ones. Because
those
we were
ones
talking
are
about
very fragile. Especially
yeah,
the
those
e,
are fragile, too. Totally.
The E cracks very easily.
Oh, yeah. E does crack easily there, too.
What I do,
yeah,
personally, especially for the E, I send the air a little bit to the right.
Okay.
Like towards the flute.
Not out of the flute. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at me,
yeah, nothing is there.
It's not,
nothing, yeah,
it's not
obvious.
It's not obvious.
No.
It's probably more of a visualization type of thing than a real thing that I'm doing. Or maybe it's so tiny that you can't see it, but I'm actually doing something. We would have to make to have scientific tools,
mm-hmm,
to really measure, and
yeah,
we don't. So, but it does work very well.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I think about, and I gave that trick to a student this week, and she was like, what? That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it stopped cracking.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little angle to the right.
Could work. Yeah, totally. Yeah. They're fragile notes. They're fragile notes indeed.
And then
they
practice
get more fragile
them and
with me,
find their sweet spot. Because sometimes,
mm-hmm,
there's tiny adjustments that need to be,
yeah,
made, you know.
Yeah.
And in the La Sonorité that we were talking about before, the whole second part of the book, I think page 16 or something,
mm-hmm,
or third part of the book, yeah, page 16, you have a lot of those exercises that always come back to the E.
E, F sharp.
E. Yeah. You know, so you can work on those notes a lot.
And it's a lot of right hand stuff too, so it's really getting that right hand active too.
And you can really also make your own exercises on those notes and practice them. Like tongue them, swear them, but it's usually when you attack them that they crack.
So give that a try, see if that works. Let us know in the in another video in the comments. And if that doesn't work, we'll look at it again. Martu Licht is saying, I play in a band, and when I have to play long tones in a song sometimes, I begin to have pain on my chin a little bit. Is it a problem of bad posture?
Maybe you push too hard.
Maybe you're pressing too hard, yeah.
Is it the chin or the...
The jaw.
The jaw.
Yeah. Is it literally like there or is it there? Yeah.
Let us know. Usually people complain about their jaw. And when people complain about their jaw, what I saw is people push too hard with their flute on their... So maybe it's because you feel your flute is not steady in your hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In that case, maybe a thumb port would be helpful.
Maybe, yeah.
Or reevaluating how you hold your flute. Maybe you need to...
Totally.
Maybe the angle that you put your head joint with the flute is not the best for you and your body. Maybe you need to bring the head joint a bit more inside and bring the rods more a little bit more
over the line
on the top of the flute.
Yeah, the rod. Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, maybe it's little adjustments like that. But maybe trying a thumb port and trying to find your sweet spot and maybe trying to find the better spot for your head joint in line how you place the head joint with the body of the flute. Because it's not a one size fits all.
No.
I know that flute companies put a little drawing there and some teachers, especially in band, because
they're not necessarily
flutists. Like that's if you asked me to teach the trumpet, I would do what I can.
Or French horn.
French horn even less.
Yeah. Sure.
And so they say, oh, put it there. But in reality, there's more research to be done with that. So I don't put it there. I don't know many people who do put it there exactly. Most people have their own place. So it might be that you feel that your flute is not steady. And then to compensate that, you really push it on your chin. And then you have that pain. And by steadying the flute, maybe you won't have to push that hard. And everything else will get better. That's my theory. But I don't know.
Black Days says, hey, I got my flute 2 days ago and I only need help with one thing. How do you blow across the flute? How do you blow across the flute?
You don't really blow across the flute.
No, you blow into the flute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try that. That could work.
We have a video about the first notes.
We do have a new
first sounds.
Yeah, check that out. First note, first sounds. Those videos will definitely help
us. How to assemble the flute.
Yeah. If it's fresh and new like
that's important because you don't want to put your hands on the keys and crush
definitely,
your keys and all those
there's
things.
A lot of good tips like that.
It's a good idea to watch that.
Totally. Try thinking about blowing down in the flute though instead of across too. Yeah. Not across.
Down and not across. Like 45 degrees.
I don't necessarily, an angle. Because the angle is relative to everybody else.
Because there's a whistle. So the whistle means there's a little bit of air going out and a little bit of air going
in.
That's
right. It's causing that scientific effect. That physics effect.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily that tone, but one of those tones for sure. Because whistling has nothing to do with the play.
I know.
But it's
like
the sound.
Whistle.
It's just the sound.
It's more like a whistle in a window that's not closed well.
Sure.
You have a little bit of air in, a little bit of air
and then
air
it makes this
out,
thing.
It makes
causes
this...
friction.
Yeah.
It causes this friction to make a frequency.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all
it's
physics.
It's not like whistling with your lips.
No,
at
no,
all.
No. Not
it's
at all.
It's more
Totally.
Yeah.
Silver Flute wants to know, how do you tune the fourth octave of the flute? C7, C sharp 7, and F7. Blake D. Blaze. Sorry, Blake D. Blaze. I'm sorry I didn't pronounce it right. It's a bit far for me to say.
So the fourth
so mega octaves,
I don't tune them.
I pray.
Tune them out of tune.
I pray. Because how can you, because those are so it's so unstable on the flute that it's so unstable because we don't tend to play that high and usually it's very quick those notes usually. Composers usually put them there to be these effects But if you only, if you had C, C sharp 7, and then D, and then E and F, and you had those, it would be, in, like, I want to know, on a very well-built flute, in fact, how in tune are those notes in relative to each other, but they're actually, like, on the piano. Like, on the piano, when you have to tune that high, when you piano tune, they're so hard to tune, even on the piano, because you have so little room to deal with. You have this little string that's being pulled, just like this. It's like you only have one or two fingerings, and you're hoping for the best that you have this exact amount of breath to get that note.
And am I wrong in saying that when you tune a piano, the higher octaves are a bit higher than the lower octaves?
Of course, because it's a different temperament. You tune it out of tune to each other.
Yeah, but we do play out of tune.
Yep, right? Yeah, of course.
So absolutely. To be in tune, it's a little bit out of tune, but...
Yeah. Oh, it is. It
exactly the flute is kind of well built in a way because the higher notes are supposed to be a tiny bit higher.
Only to a certain extent,
but
yeah.
Usually with our flutes, it's too high.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
But you do your best. You try to lower them by changing the angle, opening a lot in them out, and you do your best, really. Yeah.
And some makers make different intervals a bit different between like the scalings. There's like Cooper scale and all those things are different.
I have done before, like, let's say I have... I don't like it very much anymore, but when I was younger, let's say I had a very soft second movement, I would pull in a little bit because I had more difficulty controlling the intonation. And then I would have the third movement very loud and high. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, pull in and out. So I would pull in a little bit for the slow movement and then pull out a little bit for the fast movement. Tiny bit, but, increments, you know, to help my to help me with that.
Yeah.
But practice with a tuner and try to open a lot and send it more inside, more low. Yeah. And
also experiment on those high notes because, and what fingerings, there are actually multiple fingerings for different flute makers for each one of those notes. Some, for C, it's that, it's three fingers, that, and then maybe the D trigger or
sometimes
the D flat trigger.
Sometimes you add a finger or add
You
add a
ring.
A ring.
Yeah, ring means pressing without fully compressed.
If you have an open hold flute. Yeah. And then you can lower a little bit like that. Yeah. So there's different ways
you
can...
Yeah, there's different types of fingerings. I think the there's a lot of books that have that. There's even a good website that with the, all the alternative fingerings that have been figured out on most of the flutes. But sometimes those, even handmade flutes, can't get above D. You know, they D and that's it. They can't play E, they can't play F, but I've never seen E or F
in music.
In music. So,
I've had one D sharp in Kegel.
Yeah, I've seen D sharps a lot.
He's a German composer.
Yeah, I've played D sharps. D sharps are
that's
around.
That's it.
Yeah.
I played one D sharp.
Yeah. D's are like normal.
Have it in Prokofiev.
And in Prokofiev. Yeah, Prokofiev and in Prokofiev. In his symphonies, I mean, they're in there too.
Yeah,
and
but
stuff like that.
It's rare.
But it's rare. There's a lot of C. There's a lot of C sharp, in
not,
a lot of stuff.
Not a lot.
Yeah, there's some C's and some stuff.
Yeah, not
but
that
not
much.
Like in like the norm. Like yeah.
It's not like we play that all the time.
No, that's the thing. So when you have you should know them. But I mean, like I've only heard one person in my life be able to play scales up to D sharp, and. That was abnormal for me. It was abnormal to hear, but the flute was, I think, pretty well made. And it was on a Cooper scale flute, so it wasn't like my flute, how it was built. You know, it had a different temperament, so it was able to, I guess, play those notes a bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even it sounded, when I changed my head joint, some harmonics were more difficult to get out.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the head joint.
Right.
But, you know, they all have their, like you said.
Yeah. Robert wants to know, can you play us an example of beatboxing on the flute?
Yeah. I'm not very good at
I'm okay, but I'm not very good. And I have a cold. But,
I know, it's like...
Yeah, they're like...
There are different sounds.
Yeah. There's a lot of resetting on the... There's a lot of resetting on the embouchure. Like, the way Greg Patillo does it, he has a... I think he's really perfected the whole resetting of his embouchure because... Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much... Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then just moving, and then just start moving fingers, and then making real tones. And then he does like really crazy percussive stuff too.
And then you have to practice.
Yeah, you gotta practice it like crazy.
Yeah, at one point I took one of Greg Patillo's study, and I was like, I'm gonna learn it. And then I don't know what I did with it. I bought it.
Yeah,
I don't know where it is.
I
have to find it or reprint it.
Or reprint
somewhere.
It.
I should work on it
because
it's cool.
That's a cool new technique.
I lacked time and yeah. But if you check videos about how
he has some good videos.
He has videos, but also you can check videos about
Beatboxing itself. The actual itself. Actual beatboxers.
Then you can use that
beatboxing tutorials
on your flute. And
because there's definitely
pretty
some.
Much the same thing. Except the flute gives it, you know, a little extra.
Totally.
And then what I find difficult is to go from the beatbox sound to the real sound, like you said. Yeah. But I would have to work on it. That's inspiring.
Thanks, Robert.
It's going to motivate me to try to work on it more.
And finally, if you have any more questions, we're going to kind of round off the show now. But if you have one or two more questions, squeeze them in and we'll get to them. But Robert, again, he wants to know any tips on tuning quickly and accurately on an electronic tuner when everyone else around me is making a racket tuning at the same time.
Well, that's difficult.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I have a friend who's a harpist, so she needs to tune her harp and an orchestra. So she has a little microphone that she...
You have that on yours? You can do that on yours.
So she plugs a mic on her tuner.
Yeah.
So you could do that, but it's tough to hold.
It's not even a mic. I think they have a clip-on. It's like a contact mic. So it literally, like they have on guitars, pickup mic. It's a pickup mic.
She puts it under her harp.
Oh, yeah, you said that. I guess. Sorry. Yeah.
I don't know if you can put it on your.
There is a flute version of them. There are flute versions you can clip on it. But for me, I'm like, if you're at that point that you're around 100 people all tuning at the same time, like I would just pick my person next to me and try to tune with them, and then them tuning to the right person of you, and. Then see on the tuner after.
What you can do also is ask the first violin or the conductor or whatever, are we tuning at 440, 441, 442? And then they're going to tell you. And then you can tune before you go there and you're 100 people.
Yeah, because you're going to be at that. Yeah.
And then maybe also work with drones to play in tune with drones.
Yeah, drones help.
Drones are just a note that is held.
Yeah, not the things
this
that fly.
This way when you get... This way, when you get in rehearsal and you get the A, you're not so nervous and you can play and be like, okay, here, that's where I am. And when you tune, play the way you're going to play during the piece. Don't play super soft. And then you're going to be too high because you're going to be like, oh, I'm way too low. And like, try to play the dynamic, something comfortable so that it's related to how you're going to play after. And if you tune with a tuner, play some notes that are with the left hand and some notes that involve the right hand because they have different tendencies. So like A and D or, you know, a few notes. Even when I get an A, sometimes I go A, I do an E and a D so I can have a better idea. I do two octaves. And then you find a spot, but we have so much control over our...
Totally.
We shouldn't stress too much because... No. It doesn't change that much. If you're a bit too high, a bit too low here, you can change a lot with just how you're playing. So be confident in your ears and relax. Let it happen.
Yeah. Totally. Well, I think that's everything for today. You guys are all great.
Thanks
so much, everybody, for all your questions. Like I said, if you guys are looking in for a flute or anything like that, go to the Flute Center of New York, the Flute Channel, or flutesforsale.com, flutesfor4sale.com. Or you can contact them directly
and
use our code. Use our code TFC. Yeah, TFC. And that gets you to try up to... No, it's not there. That's just what... that's our t-shirts insert. You can buy t-shirts too. We have t-shirts. You can check that out in the link in the descriptions as well. What?
Mugs.
And mugs too. There's mugs right there. We got mugs. But we're going to be changing them over, but you can still get them now. It's pretty awesome. So use our code TFC. You can try up to 3 or 4 flutes or piccolos or alto flutes or whatever type of flutes. They have the largest collection in the world in both used and new. So that's pretty cool. And that helps us out a lot. Big time. Let's squeeze one more in. Somebody want to... Martinu Licht. Sorry, I'm butchering your name. How can I improve my agility in a part with G-sharp in the scale? It's difficult for me doing the scale fast when I play that note. That's interesting.
Okay, so let's say A major scale.
A major, yeah.
What I would do is start by doing A, G sharp.
A, G sharp.
Okay.
So A, G sharp, oh, that's so smart.
Just two notes. And then you say, okay, there's just... You try to be conscious of what's going on. Oh, there's two fingers moving here. So you go... And then F sharp, G sharp. So you have two fingers moving. One is going up, one is going down. When one is going up, one is going down, I tend to focus on the fingers going up because the more natural thing is to hold things. Like when we're babies, we hold. And so it's more difficult to lift than to press.
Yeah.
So I would go like this. Until that becomes easy. And then I would go.
You're adding one note at a time. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's...
True, yeah, it starts getting better and better.
You know, yeah. And it's not going to be in one day.
No.
You know, you do that.
Definitely not.
And then you let it rest. You let your brain do its work while you're doing other stuff.
Yeah, normal
stuff.
You
go back the next day. It's better to do 5 minutes two or three times during the day than 20 minutes at once.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Just go back fresh. And when you'll go back, it's going to be a bit, oh, what is it again? And then that's how... You know, in your brain, you make those circuits, but that's how that circuit is going to get very, very deep, you know? Because you did it often. You go back to it. You stop, you forget, and then you re-remember, and then you forget again, and then you go back to it. That's how you learn the best, not by trying to force it in one day.
Yeah. No, yeah, never or force in one time, day. No, exactly. So. Give it a try.
Usually, the way I try to teach my students, when something is difficult, I try to see, okay, how can I make this bite a smaller bite for your brain, you know? Because it's a big bite to Makes chew sense. At once, a full scale.
Makes sense. You know? Totally. So, yeah, hopefully that answered your question. And again, like I said, we also have the Patreon, which if you don't know about Patreon, that is a direct help for us right away, monetarily wise. You can donate as little as $1 or $2 or as much as you want per month. And there's no, you can stop also at any time too. So you can go to patreon.com/theflutechannel. And that helps us out tremendously. You can join us there. We usually do a couple of cool little things that usually you don't get to do on the YouTube channel. And then also, if you want to have a lesson with Lily, you can also contact us at info@theflutechannel.com in person or online. You can just contact us through that. You can have one lesson, a bunch of lessons, and work at your own pace with Amelie on your goals. So yeah, info@theflutechannel.com. So thanks everybody it was a great podcast. We're going to do another one in over a month's time. We're going to try it. We're going to have a bunch of just practicings, and we're going to drop a new video tomorrow as well. But the next podcast will be around December, so it's going to be a while.
And we're also working on the idea of doing a retreat next summer.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a week-long retreat somewhere really nice and beautiful. So if you're thinking about doing some type of vacation and you want to include flute in it, this is the great place to do that. There's going to be more details with that soon. You can join our newsletter.
We're still in the phase where we're...
Oh, completely brainstorming.
Brainstorming. So if you have ideas of what would make you happy, what you would like in that type of
environment,
would you like private lessons, group lessons, a little bit of, you know, so we can make
group
something.
Group talks, you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
You know, more a little thing with just us or guests, you know.
Totally.
With what we can do realistically, of
Absolutely,
course.
Absolutely, exactly. Yeah, totally.
Like, we welcome ideas.
Totally.
Because we want to make something that's going to make people happy.
Yeah.
So, if we can communicate, that's going to be
even
better.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. So, like I said, this is not going to be our last live stream for a while. We're going to have a live stream every weekend. For a while, just won't be the Flute Talk podcast. It'll be Just Practicing. If you're not familiar with Just Practicing, you should definitely check it out next week, where you run through
some
music.
Or you can go and see some
old ones.
Watch
some old ones. But we won't have another Flute Talk podcast until about December. But we will have live events every weekend and new videos every week as well. And yeah, so thanks, guys. Really, really appreciate you guys being here for this Saturday afternoon.
Saturday afternoon.
Here. See you guys. Take care.
See you.
Bye.